In 2011, more than 250,000 people lost their lives in the famine in the Horn of Africa. 250,000 to 300,000. Millions of others were impacted by this ongoing cycle of food insecurity, conflict, militarization, and climate change. There are, in 2017, several countries on the African continent that continue to face a devastating famine, which was pointed out at the beginning of this year. The figures run from 16 million to as high as 20 million plus, if you include countries like Yemen, Somalia on the African continent, South Sudan, Ethiopia, and Kenya. And the West African country of Nigeria is also part of that. South Sudan has more than 5 million people in food insecurity, Kenya 4 million, Nigeria 5 million, Somalia 6 million. And in Yemen, the numbers range from lows of 10 million upwards. Joining Africa today to discuss the crisis situation in Africa in terms of food security and famine, food insecurity and famine, is Marie Clark. Marie Clark is the executive director of ActionAid USA. Prior to this, Ms. Clark served as a deputy director of Africa Action, the oldest human rights organization in the U.S. that focused exclusively on Africa. She was previously executive director of the Jubilee USA Network and has been very active around Africa for many years, food issues, international issues. She is the author of a recent article, which was on the ActionAidUSA.org website, East Africa is Facing Drought, while the White House wants to flex a military muscle. Marie, thanks for joining Africa today.
Thank you for having me.
Good. You were with us just a few months ago, and we wanted to continue with an update here on the issues that you raised then and you continue to raise in your recent article. First, give us some background on ActionAid.
Sure. So ActionAid is a really different type of international organization. We're a federation, and what makes us different is that we are run entirely by people from the ground up in local communities, completely owned by the people from the countries in which we work. And we spread across 45 countries around the world, many of them across the African continent. So as I share with you today about our experiences working in Somaliland and Ethiopia, Kenya, Nigeria, and other places impacted by these food crises, I'm sharing really on behalf of my Somali colleagues, my Kenyan colleagues, my Nigerian colleagues who are on the front lines of these crises.
Mm-hmm. And your offices are in Johannesburg, are they not?
Yes, our central body that helps coordinate all of our countries is based in Johannesburg, and then ActionAid USA, as the name indicates, is located here in the United States. I sit actually in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. When we spoke in March, we talked about a famine, and you can walk us through the terms here, famine, food insecurity, that was impacting four key regions on the African continent and Yemen. What do we mean when the differences when we say famine versus food insecurity here, Marie?
All right. So famine is a really technical term. Essentially, a famine can only be declared when a certain number of deaths and malnutrition and hunger are met. So at least 20% of the households in an area need to face extreme food shortages and a limited ability to cope. They have to have acute malnutrition rates that exceed 30%, and the death rate has to exceed 2 persons per day per 10,000 people. So that's the technical definition of famine, and we've declared that there is a famine in South Sudan, in northern Nigeria, in Yemen, and in some other places. It would then not include Ethiopia or Somaliland or Kenya, even though there are extreme food shortages and perhaps only 10% of the households, the acute malnutrition might fall right below that 30%. It still wouldn't be considered a famine. I think that despite those technical differences, we can take those huge numbers that you mm-hmm. shared in the beginning of how many millions of people are facing this crisis in these different countries and just make it real for a second and think about what it's like if you are a family. You're a woman who's leading your family. You're forced to move from where you are because your livestock has died or your crops have entirely withered through the drought, if we're looking at the food crisis in East Africa and in the Horn of Africa, for example, and you're completely dependent all of a sudden on food aid. And you risk malnutrition, you risk starvation of your family. Women have a tendency then to be the ones that sort of take it for the team for their family, right? Preferring to use what little food and water for their children's survival, to walk much further than they ever have before to gather water that they need or firework. And it leaves them especially vulnerable then not only to hunger and starvation, but also to violence against women. And you can imagine in crisis situations where you have entire communities that are literally facing starvation, that tempers run hot and that violence can be more prevalent. And women are usually the ones that are most impacted from that violence.
You know, I was trying to think through as I was doing research for the article, you know, the way in which the terminology moves and the way you stepped aside from it there is that you're dealing with regions who not just this year are having issues of food insecurity and famine, but have over the last 5 years had the same, this recurring impact. How does that fit into this frame of how international agencies look at these crises? Because many of the people in Somalia were facing the same situation in 2011.
Right. This is something that is incredibly frustrating to us, especially for when we're looking at the crisis across East Africa and the Horn, is because it was a slow onset crisis. We've been knowing that this is coming for years. We've been seeing it grow with year after year of successive drought and extreme climate challenges, which are destroying agriculture in that region. And ActionAid and other organizations have been working very hard to be able to build out resilience amongst farmers and to be able to strengthen farmers' ability to practice a climate-resilient, sustainable agriculture. And in those areas which we work, and this is, I think, the silver lining or the spark of hope amidst a really deep crisis, in those areas in which we've worked with farmers to change their agriculture practices to work with the earth instead of against the earth in ways that mm-hmm. help build resilience to drought. It is those farmers, actually, that we are now sourcing food from in order to feed people in other parts of those same countries. So when we make a food pack, which can feed a household for a month, okay. costs us $65 to be able to give a family the amount of food that they need to eat for a month. We're sourcing that food from some of the farmers that are doing actually amazing jobs of being able to cultivate despite the drought. But I think it's the pastoralists that are hit the hardest right now in the drought-affected countries in the Horn and East Africa, because literally, if you just look at Somaliland alone, which is the northern part of Somalia, 85% of the livestock have died. In Ethiopia, the numbers are almost as high. And in southern Somalia, where there's more conflict, the famine refugees, and food insecure people are trying to move north to Somaliland in order to be able to both find more security and also because they have the hope that they will be able to find more water and food and perhaps be able to keep any remaining livestock alive. So operating in Somaliland, in northern Somalia, what we're finding is that we are being flooded by internal migrants that are responding to this food crisis. And it's been a real challenge to try and keep up with the need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of the questions as I was doing the notes here, particularly in terms of the fact of those people who are internally displaced and what the long-term impact is or what the impact is on people who are pastoralists. What happens to a family, what happens to a community when you lose your animals? And there's some images, I think, on the ActionAid USA site. That picture, Marie.
Yeah, I mean, it's devastating to a family that relies entirely on livestock, and then all of the livestock die. What do you do? It makes you dependent on aid. And I think that's why it's so important for people who are interested in supporting organizations and providing relief for these food crises that are raging, to be looking at organizations that are invested in long-term solutions, okay. that are providing those dignity kits, soap, food packs, water drums that ActionAid and others are providing, but that are also providing gender-based violence training to address mm-hmm. harm, economic empowerment trainings, finding alternative livelihood sources that are going to be able to provide seed animals, so pregnant goats that we bring from other parts of the region that haven't been as impacted, so that families can kickstart their life again. The trouble is that we think that before it gets better, it's actually going to be worse, and that's because we are expecting that this drought is going to continue, that it's going to linger in each of the impacted countries. It's going to get hotter before it gets cooler. And so at this point, for those that have owned livestock, it's incredibly difficult to keep them alive.
Talk about the impacted countries and give some highlights to their particular issues. There apparently has been some improving news, and you can talk to us about that in countries such as South Sudan and some parts of Somalia. But talk about the countries they're involved in. Give us a sketch for the listeners.
Sure. I mean, South Sudan certainly has been making headlines. They've declared it, you know, with that wonky terminology, they've declared it a famine. Half of the population is in extreme hunger in South Sudan. And the statistics on the news are looking a little bit more encouraging, that things might be getting a little bit better with perhaps a bit of rain on the horizon. But what our experience is in Uganda and Kenya and other neighboring spaces is that South Sudanese are fleeing across the borders, looking for food and support and for relief. And so we are finding that the emergency response that we're doing in Uganda and Kenya is really swelling with South Sudanese who have become refugees. They've crossed the borders. I think in Somalia and Somaliland, they're looking at only increased numbers if we don't, as an international community, really step up and start to be able to provide the type of relief that's needed. And again, this is a solvable problem. It is not impossible to stop these food crises and to reverse their trends and to invest in these lasting solutions. In Somaliland, what we're finding is also, in addition, as I've said before, to the increased hunger and food insecurity, is a real rise in violence against women. In Kenya, the big challenge is the rising food prices. So whereas in Somalia, it's a challenge of literally, you know, is there food to source from, and a lack of food and water and the death of livestock. In Kenya, there's still many regions in which you can source food, but the food prices are rising, which is putting millions at risk of food insecurity and hunger.
Why, Marie? Why are the food prices spiking? You, in one of your articles, you noted that in Somalia or South Sudan, the prices began to spike 2 years ago, and people noticed that. Why wasn't there, or why isn't there, a mechanism for the international community to be able to respond better? I think you said in your article, you know, nonprofits can't solve this issue on their own, but the prices spiked a while ago.
That's true. And again, this is a crisis that we saw coming. And it, as a result, is really a crisis of accountability at every level, a crisis of accountability for the governments that either failed to put into place early warning systems or saw the early warning systems go off and just didn't prioritize responding and taking care of their people. And at the international level as well, both at the African Union, sort of African international level of countries being able to step up for one another, but also at the international level. And this is something that I've been especially enraged about over the last couple of weeks, because the news has been coming out and increased clarity about the Trump budget. And what we're looking at is for the African continent that the Trump budget will cut $3 billion in aid, in addition, $1 billion less for antiretrovirals to address HIV and AIDS, and at the same time is increasing the military budget, which is over $500 billion already, by an additional $52 billion. And so what we're doing in our foreign policy is that we are ignoring the fact that we can actually provide, as the international community and the United States ought to be leading amongst them the type of resources that are needed in this region in order to be able to reverse this food crisis. And instead of that, and instead of aid programs that could help to build out stronger agriculture programs and climate resilience and all of that, while we're leaving the climate negotiations in Paris, we are instead focusing on military training. And even the Pentagon has been raising concerns about the fact that if there's not an investment in humanitarian aid and diplomacy, that they will need more guns because they will see a rise in conflict, a conflict that the United States interventions in have so far not proven to resolve conflict, but only to spur new conflict. So let's just think about Somalia just for one moment. Just in Somalia, you're going to see a drop in aid, an increase in military spending and engagement because it's an area that the U.S. often sees as a conflict area and desires intervention in. You're going to see the reality that we have banned people who are seeking to flee to the United States from this crisis, and at the same time we are actively deporting 5,000 Somalis from the United States back into an extreme food crisis. This is a recipe for building enemies, for increasing crisis. It's not going to help us to repair this world.
And it's not as if the countries, for example, countries like Sudan specifically, or countries like Nigeria are poor countries. I mean, governments are interested in them in terms of their access to oil, their strategic points, etc. So there is an interest. There's not an interest here in addressing, as you're laying out in your article, some of the humanitarian issues.
Right. I mean, I think it shows a complete disregard, actually, for African lives, and it's a priority about increasing wealth or increasing what we perceive to be a military strategic advantage in a continent. We still continue in 2017 to, at least as far as our foreign policy appears to tell us, that the United States continues to see Africa as a basket of resources for our plunder.
Why has the appeal, well, the response to the appeals has been also been slow? Is that correct, Marie?
Yes, and I think part of that is that other than your show, Walter, there has been so little media coverage of this crisis.
This is the one. Well, talk more on that, Marie.
Right, and I feel incredibly frustrated about this, but it's also true it's even beyond the U.S. borders. So while one might say, okay, well, it's because right now our media is pretty focused on our current president and on other conflicts like Syria, and especially looking at the refugee crisis in other spaces, but that doesn't explain why the media has been so silent internationally on this crisis as well. And my fear is that a piece of that is from sort of fatigue around food crises in Africa, which, frankly, I feel isn't actually quite fair. So while there have been a series of really extreme food crises in the continent, that again comes from this crisis of accountability at every single level. But there also have been periods of time where Somalia and Ethiopia and other countries really actually did build out quite robust food systems. And Ethiopia is an interesting case. It's a country where, you know, we're challenged with some pretty extreme human rights abuses over the years. But in the case of this famine, from the early days, the Ethiopian government actually recognized what was happening and began to source food from other parts of the country to be able to provide food aid, and really did seek to curb this. But as one government alone wasn't able to. But what was interesting in regards to our media coverage about the situation is that Ethiopia didn't want to be seen as yet again in a crisis, mm-hmm. and a famine, didn't want that reputation to linger in the world. And so one of the unfortunate pieces is that the government really shut down our ability as NGOs that are responding to be able to broadcast what was happening in their country. And so they really cracked down on the freedom of press and the freedom of talking about the crisis, which is too bad, because it might have been able to elevate this more in the international media, at least, if not the United States.
Yeah, I look at the press quite a bit, kind of in a daily process, and there's ActionAid and there are a few other organizations that do keep it prominent, but generally in terms of the mainstream press, and not even the mainstream press so much, since the highlight maybe of February of this year, the press has seemed to have been very, very minimal on the situations of famine and food insecurity. Those two areas of Nigeria and Yemen, share with us what we're talking about in terms of numbers and kind of key points about those issues of famine and food insecurity, Nigeria and Yemen. Yemen, I was reading, it said that a child, and that's why I was, what's the term for that? A child is dying every 10 minutes?
Yes, that is an incredibly extreme. And it's a clear case of famine. There's no one that's walking away from that reality. It's probably one of the most acute and extreme places of famine in our world at this moment. And that one is a conflict that has created this famine. It's not just the climate change. And in a way, it is a perfect storm because Yemen also has experienced that their primary food crop has been impacted by extreme heat and drought, but predominantly the crisis in Yemen is caused because Saudi Arabia, the wealthiest country in the Middle East, has been bombing Yemen, which is the poorest country in the Middle East. And the United States has been supporting that bombing campaign. We've provided literally the refueling in the air. We've provided the weaponry in the beginning. And so the way we can stop that crisis, in addition to immediate food aid, is to stop the bombing. In northern Nigeria, it is the conflict with Boko Haram that has been the biggest driver of the food insecurity and being on the cusp of a famine. And children are painfully the most impacted right now in northern Nigeria. And in that case, there is, again, looking at this crisis of accountability, our teams in Nigeria are really working to have the Nigerian government even really fully, deeply acknowledge and respond to this crisis. But the fact is that this food crisis is as deadly as that conflict in Nigeria at this moment. And I think what's important for listeners in the Bay Area, in the United States, is that because the press is not making a big deal of this, and this is all something that is solvable, that we can both address the immediate food needs of families and communities and those children now, and we can build lasting solutions that can help prevent this from happening again. There is an opportunity right now for people to take action, and one of the first things that people can do is just talk about what you heard today at their dinner table with your family or your friends. Spread the word, because part of the challenge is that even well-meaning Americans who could take a minute to advocate and challenge the U.S. administration on a policy that is shrinking aid and growing military and ignoring a famine is that people don't know about it and don't realize that these trade-offs are being made politically.
Mm-hmm. You know, what was exciting, we're speaking with Marie Clark. She is the executive director of ActionAid USA. That's www.actionaidusa.org. These are areas of work she's been involved in all of her life. What was exciting was to hear back from your on-the-ground people and the correspondence we were carrying on from Kenya and from the regions where they were seeing how people are responding to things, which is something we don't get enough of, clearly.
Yeah, and in fact, right now our teams are pulling together some footage that when we've brought it back, we'd love to share with you and for people who are listening to come keep checking back on ActionAidUSA.org on our website to see the footage of these incredibly resilient farmers in Western Kenya, for example, that have, despite the incredible climate impact, despite drought, despite extreme heat, have actually been utilizing really innovative and creative climate resilient techniques of agriculture. The women have become their own advocates for the Kenyan government to provide increased agriculture funding and to to tailor that funding to exactly what their needs are as smallholder farmers, as women, even things like silly things that I would never have thought of sitting here in Washington, like the size of the fertilizer bag matters in terms of whether or not it can be utilized efficiently, it's affordable, and so forth. And so through their advocacy as well as their practice, they have been able to continue to increase their production despite the climate chaos that is around them. And it is actually from those farmers that we then are sourcing food to feed people who are either fleeing over the border from South Sudan or who are facing food insecurity or who simply cannot afford the high food prices in Kenya right now.
Are there some action points on your website? What is the website again, Marie?
www.actionaidusa.org.
Are there some action points on your site for listeners who say I'm hearing a story about the famine and the food insecurity, and these are things that myself or my community or my local representatives can do or should do?
Absolutely. And not only can you learn how to get involved in some of these hardcore drivers of the problem and long-term solutions, but right now you can make a donation right now that can feed an entire family for a month. In fact, you can feed and provide water and all of the dignity things that we need for $150 for a family for 1 month. And if you extrapolate from that, you can imagine that when we received a check of $15,000 from a donor yesterday, that means we move into an entirely new community and can provide for the food security needs of an entire community for a month. So right now, there's the opportunity to be able to make an immediate difference in terms of someone's ability to eat tonight, but you can also take advantage of advocacy opportunities that can help to shift our policies.
Mm-hmm. For the last 25 minutes, we've been speaking with Marie Clark, the Executive Director of ActionAid USA, www.actionaidusa.org. Go to the website, take a look at the article by Marie. East Africa is facing drought while the White House wants to flex military muscle. It's an article which talks about not only the issues of food and famine and food insecurity we've talked about today, but in the context of U.S. political policy, international policy around resource extraction and militarization. Marie, as always, you are welcome, always welcome here on Africa Today. And please let us know what we need to do to keep getting the word out.
Thank you, Walter.
Total pleasure. You're listening there to the voice of Marie Clark. She is the director of ActionAid USA. Go to their website, www.actionaidusa.org. Despite the fact that it isn't in the news, the issues of famine, from conflict, from lack of international priority, from drought, whatever it may be, climate change, are very, very severe on the African continent. And the countries of Somalia, the countries of South Sudan, Nigeria, particularly you heard the figure there in Yemen, where a child dies every 10 minutes. This is a long-standing war over the last, 5 or 6 years where the United States has been very involved in supporting the Saudi government. There have been some blockades of food and medical resources. These are all situations that you can become involved in at your local community level. You certainly can do things with your churches and with your communities, as well as go to ActionAid USA. Tululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululululul